Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.
Get your sexy, huh?
We are. Hour number three, Darren, Donick, and Chase. Yes. Here on ESPN 102.5, the game on this sunny, beautiful Wednesday afternoon. Don't forget, Ravens and Steelers. It's actually going to happen. Yes. They're going to kick off in about 2 hours, a little bit over 2.5 hours at Heinz Field in Pittsburgh. Tim Hasselbeck brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. Tim, what's going on?
How are you guys?
Doing fantastic. A little Wednesday NFL football today. And it is going to happen.
It's bizarre, isn't it? I mean, it just on a Wednesday period and then kind of in the middle of the day just makes it feel so strange. And it's only going to, I think, get even a little stranger from that point.
Yep. And when they play on Christmas on Friday, they will have hit every day of the week in the 2020 season, which probably shouldn't surprise us, right?
No, and, you know, it's interesting. I think I've talked to you guys. I've had, my last 4 weeks, let me go back. I had about 10 weeks straight of college football where the game I was scheduled to call was being played. And I have had three of my last four games canceled, one of them on the day of the game. And, you know, it's been hard. And to get things, you know, to a point where you can play, I think some people have done an amazing job, or I shouldn't say some. I think a lot of people have done an amazing job. And there's, you know, a lot of sacrifice and commitment, and you know, there's also obviously been some situations where it's been, you know, worse than touch and go. And you know, I think we're seeing that in the tail end here of the season. And you guys had asked me about it, you know, probably a month ago about bubble cities and where do you go. And you know, I think you guys obviously could see what was coming down the pipe here.
No doubt. No Lamar Jackson, no Willie Snead, no Mark Andrews, no Calais Campbell. For the Ravens, they're on COVID-19 list. For the Steelers, no James Conner. We just learned a little bit ago from Adam Schefter's tweet, there'll be no center Marquise Pouncey. He has been put on the COVID list as well. Something we brought up that we've talked about on the show this week, and we want to get your take on this. You know, in baseball, pitchers have their own award, right? The Cy Young Award. And then you've got an MVP award in Major League Baseball. It's very clear that, you know, it's going to take something really, really, really special for anybody other than a quarterback. It's a quarterback award, the NFL MVP mm-hmm. every year. But yet we just call it the NFL MVP. Why doesn't the NFL think about having a quarterback award and then having an MVP award? Because it gives guys like Derrick Henry, Aaron mm-hmm. Donald, Travis Kelce, the best tight end in the league, that is incredibly impactful, other guys who do special things, a chance to be considered, where they're never going to get considered as long as there's quarterbacks like Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers, and you know the list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's a great point. It has turned into a completely quarterback award. The game has continued to, you know, kind of skew in the favor of quarterbacks. You know, everyone says it's quarterback league. Look, we've made the rules easier for the quarterback. We've, you know, made the rules where, you know, we've protected them more. And so, you know, it was kind of already a quarterback award anyway. And, you know, just by kind of the nature of touching the football on every play when you have the ball on offense. And then we've made it easier. So I hadn't thought about it a whole lot, but, you know, when you bring it up, I think it would make sense, you know, to have an award that, look, at the, I don't know that that means, like, take, say, for example, whether it was Russell Wilson or Patrick Mahomes, like, you know, they could be the MVP of the league. That doesn't mean that Derrick Henry didn't have a great year or that Aaron Donald didn't have a great year. So, you know, I do think there is also an element of, look, sometimes the quarterback does deserve it, even with the other incredible seasons that other players may have.
Look, I know I'm talking to a quarterback when I say this, but we all know the quarterback gets the ball every play. Like, there are certain things the quarterback just has the advantage. Like, the running back is not going to see the ball as much as the quarterback. The receiver is not going to see the ball as much as the quarterback. It's up to the quarterback to distribute those guys the ball. And obviously there's coaching, and I get all that. But they have the advantage because they get the ball more than anybody. And so they automatically have a built-in advantage over these other guys. I mean, they can only do, you know, what's afforded to them. Like, a receiver can only catch as many times as he's targeted. A running back can only run the ball.
And how about the poor corner that is really good and everyone just decides not to go his direction?
Yes, you know? No doubt.
The end that gets double-teed all the time. Yeah, look, you know, the funny thing about it is you know, you kind of preface this by saying, like, hey, you're talking to a quarterback. Like, you know, sometimes when I was playing, like, there'd be these arguments in a locker room, and, you know, even over the last decade or so while I've been working at ESPN, you know, I've heard people, and we've seen it, you know, Richard Sherman talking about, like, hey, who's more important, you know, Julio Jones or Matt Ryan? Like, which guy is it? And, you know, these guys need to be paid as offensive weapons, not as, you know, a receiver or a running back. And look, my response to all those things was like, well, you should have learned how to throw better when you were a kid. Like, it's hard. It's a hard position. And so I think that, look, there's an element of that. Like, when you have a good one, you have a chance. When you don't, you don't. And so, look, I get it. I get it. There's a reason that guy touches the ball as many times as he does. And, you know, there's a reason that, you know, you want the ball in that person's hands. And so, and look, I think those guys should be rewarded for it. So, look, I'm not saying there shouldn't be another award. I think it's a great point you raise. You know, at the same time, it's more difficult than playing other positions. Maybe not physically, but, you know, the combination of the mental and physical.
I guess, Tim, the bar can't be a 2,000-yard season for a running back to get any. You know what I mean? It's like the bar can't be for a running back to go 2,000 yards.
How many catches did Michael Thomas have?
Agreed.
Last year?
Like 119 or 129 or something ridiculous.
Yeah. So, but the challenge with that is like, well, somebody had to be throwing it to him. So unless your guy gets hurt like they had last year and Teddy Bridgewater plays five games, like, you know, how does it not end up as the – you know, is the quarterback being part of that equation? And listen, in terms of, you know, how it goes for runners, look, what I feel like what, you know, we are seeing with Derrick Henry, you know, here with the Titans, look, that's not normal. Like, look around the league, like what Derrick Henry is doing, you know, is not a normal thing. So there just aren't that many of these opportunities, you know, for a guy to carry the ball and carry the ball near the goal line as many times as you know, as they are. And now I forget. I want to say Sean Alexander maybe won the award one year with my
05.
When my brother was
05,
yeah, when my brother was a starting quarterback in Seattle.
But he ran for almost 2,000 yards. That's why.
And listen, and look, his touchdown numbers
were like
crazy,
20. I know it was like 20 something touchdowns.
But here's an interesting thing. Look at the number of carries he had that year inside the 5-yard line. It was kind of one of these things where it was kind of a freakish year where, you know, for whatever reason, you had that many possessions and opportunities inside the five and he had those carries. Much like Calvin Johnson a few years ago, it was like he wasn't getting into the end zone. And he had some absurd number, like 8 receptions where he was tackled inside the 5-yard line.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, when, how, you know, so some ways, and I just remember talking about this when I was doing, you know, more fantasy football work, and it was, you know, part of it is like some of that stuff is just really unpredictable, and you can get outliers, and maybe that's what you need.
Well, it's like DK Metcalf. He has 180 yards receiving, and he doesn't have a touchdown on Monday night. How does that happen? Well, he got tackled at the one. He did have one go right through his hands in the end zone. But you're right. Look, this is not about not rewarding that. Look, these quarterbacks are special. They're fun to watch, and they deserve to be recognized with an award every year. I just think that how about you reward them? Because guys like Derrick, if Derrick Henry is the NFL's leading rusher again, and he does what he's done all season long and keeps winning them games. He's won 2 games in overtime, the running back, and they weren't plunges from the 1-yard line. You know, he has no chance of winning when there's guys like Russell Wilson and Kyler Murray and Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers and those guys in the league. He's never got a chance. So reward those guys for their season and give them the best in that group, and then let everybody else get rewarded, too, with some type of a reward. That's all I'm saying, award.
Yeah, I think it's I actually think it's a very good idea. You know, then you have to add in market, you know, as a part of it. So, you know, if Saquon Barkley were healthy and doing the things that Derrick Henry is doing, and then maybe add, you know, a few more receiving yards and opportunities that way, look, I think he's more likely to have a shot at it than Derrick Henry. You know, and I would even make a similar argument, you know, for Derrick Henry for Saquon Barkley instead of Christian McCaffrey. So, yeah, then you have to throw in market, and it shouldn't matter, but it does.
Talking to Tim Hasselbeck, talking NFL here, and Tim, it's pretty clear when you look at the stats. The Browns are 8-3, but they've been fortunate. They've won a lot of close games. Their overall cumulative score is underwater. They've been outscored, but they're 8-3. So give us your assessment of them. Do they have another level that they could get to where they are a legit playoff team? And as I say this, regardless of your answer, we know that they're capable of beating the Titans. The Titans have lost to the Bengals, so that's just the nature of the league. But how good are the Browns in your mind?
I think they're a good football team. I was looking at their schedule, remaining schedule, and kind of the way I see it, and I don't know if you'd see it similarly, but like I think they should win I think they're capable, for sure, of losing 3 out of their next 5, if I'm remembering it correctly when I looked at it.
Yeah, they still have the Giants and the Jets to play.
So Giants and Jets are wins, but then look at their other games, including the Titans this weekend.
Titans, Ravens, Steelers are the other 3.
Yeah. And so unless if the Ravens aren't in a situation where, like, let's say they're, you know, mostly full strength in terms of having players available, I don't think that they would be favored to win any of those games. So, you know, how good are they? Listen, they're way better than they've been. And I think Kevin Stefanski has kind of just cleaned up the operation in general. You know, it'd be hard for me to think at 10 wins that they're not in, right? I mean, they're
right.
So look, they're a playoff caliber team. They, you know, they can be good. I think the quarterback is just okay. I think that, you know, they probably have a little more balance and less kind of volatility offensively, as crazy as it sounds, without Odell Beckham. They still have really good players. They can run the football. Defensively, they have players that are, you know, like guys that would go start virtually everywhere else. Like, I think they are really, you know, they can be a really good football team. But I think what kind of, you know, maybe separates them, just to, you know, kind of continue on with this quarterback thing and their value is, you know, I think the quarterback can miss three, four, five plays a game that ultimately end up being a difference in a game. And sometimes that's all it takes when you're talking about two teams that are pretty good.
Let's talk about the Buccaneers for a minute. It's a fascinating point in the season that they're at right now, because a lot of the critics are saying, hey, we've been saying that Tom Brady's philosophy of offense isn't quite a match for Bruce Arians' philosophy of offense. And so it seems like it's been exploited, especially against good defenses here. So where do you think it goes from here?
You know, I think at this point in the season, if they haven't really decided to adopt a bunch of the stuff that Tom had success with doing in New England, I don't know why we think it's going to happen right now and why we would think that everyone would kind of be on the same page and operating, you know, in that structure, you know, at this point in the season. It's shocking to me, to be honest. Like, I think I've told you guys this before, but when I was with the Arizona Cardinals my last year, Kurt Warner was a starting quarterback, and he had taken over for Matt Leinart, and Todd Haley was the play caller. Now, Todd Haley had a lot of ideas of what he wanted to do on offense, but as Kurt became the starter, he basically went to Kurt and was like, look, you're the one that's got the ball in his hands. You're the one that's going to get hit if, you know, you're stuck holding with it too long, or it's going to throw an interception, you're going to get blamed. So I want you to come in with ideas of things that you would like done. And so Kurt, you know, to his credit, basically was like, all right. And he would come in with a plan of things that he wanted in, plays and concept that he wanted in. And a lot of them were stuff that he was successful doing when he was with the Rams. And we ran it. And Kurt was amazing. You know, all of a sudden, like, things started to change in Arizona because they were doing things that the quarterback was good at doing. And so I just don't know why you wouldn't do that from the jump. I really don't. I just, to me, good coaching is putting your players in their best situation to be successful, not, you know, put players into your scheme. And I think it's been a problem. And, you know, I didn't think it was going to be a problem. I really didn't. And I think I'm just kind of shocked by it.
And I watched quite a bit of the game between the Chiefs and Tampa. Both quarterbacks got the benefit of the late hit or the quote unnecessary roughness. And I'm curious, is there anything that can be done in your mind, Tim? I know we're trying to protect the quarterbacks, but there are some times, and I think even Ryan Tannehill had one go his way last week at a key time against the Colts where he gets the benefit of the flag. You look at the replay, it doesn't look that bad. Whether you think it's a low hit, and maybe when you look at the replay, it's really not that low. You know, it doesn't look like a cheap shot in any way. Or here's another one that seems to be one that comes up for me a lot. I'm trying to block your pass, Tim. I'm the pass rusher. Mm-hmm. I get my hand up, and I'm not trying to hit you. I'm just trying to deflect the ball. I come down, and I hit the side of your helmet a little bit. It's not a big follow-through. It's not a karate chop. But as soon as there's contact, here comes the flag. It just seems like there's got to be somewhere in there to give the defender a little bit of a chance.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. The guy rushing in, the defensive back that's, you know, running full speed, quarterback goes to throw, he jumps, you know, he's got his hands in the air like he's trying to just bat the ball away because he's not going to get to the quarterback in time. The ball gets away, and as the guy is coming down, you know, his hand or his wrist, you know, makes contact with, you know, the quarterback's helmet. Like, I know exactly what you're saying. And look, I think the thing is this whole idea, this whole notion of like forcible contact. And you see it in college football a lot when they review the targeting. I had one in a game a few weeks ago where, you know, it was one of these deals where, like, there was this defenseless receiver, and there was definitely contact to the player's head, you know, the defenseless player's head. But the more you looked at it and they reviewed it, because that's what they do in college, you're like, listen, he touched him in the head, and he was defenseless, and it kind of turned his head a little bit, but it wasn't forcible contact. And I think when you look at the Mahomes play, you look at the Brady play from this weekend, I think we can all agree that it wasn't forcible contact. And, you know, John Fox, the former, you know, Bears, Broncos, and Panthers coach, who I used to work with quite a bit, used to say, like, you're allowed to touch him. You know, when he's talking about pass interference, you know? Like, you're allowed to touch him. You just can't impede his progress. I think sometimes we get that confused. Like, you kind of should be allowed, if you're a defender, to bump into his helmet if it's not forcible contact. That's how I see it. And maybe you have to review it. I don't know.
We're talking to Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, college football analyst as well. Tim had fun last week playing Top Golf. I know you missed with these guys, but we had a good time, so that was good.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that was okay. It's hard to remember your schedule when you're on vacation, especially
exactly.
when you're on vacation with your best friend. And you know, we had a good time. I mean, Lake Winnipesaukee was great. Well,
yeah, it was.
Did you see Bill Murray up there?
Bob? Hey, excellent call by you on the What About Bob reference.
Well done, Willie. Well done.
Hey, we didn't want to keep Fire Island all to ourselves.
So I know it's still very early to I guess do a true evaluation, but as you look ahead with the Saints and what life beyond Drew Brees is going to look like, you know, is Taysom Hill showing you enough that you think he can take the reins and be a quarterback and not just be this gadget type player that they've used over the last few years?
Listen, if Cam Newton can be a quarterback for as long as he's been a quarterback, if Lamar Jackson can win an MVP, you know, if players that have been like that can do it, then yes. You know, the answer is, yeah, he can be a quarterback in the NFL, and you can build it around him. I do think that I will say this, like, and I'm probably in the minority with this. I think they are more difficult to defend when he is a utility player, much like they did with Teddy Bridgewater last year, where it was like, look, we're, you know, Teddy Bridgewater is not Drew Brees, but we're going to do this, and you still have to deal with number seven. I think that's what they should do with Jameis Winston. That's just, I think they would be better off doing that until Brees gets back. That is how I see it. So, yeah, they can. They can build it around him, and I'm sure that Sean Payton will do a good job doing that. But if you were to go ask defensive coordinators, like, what would you rather defend? I think they would rather defend him at quarterback all the time.
If you're doing, and we've been doing power rankings, we'll do ours tomorrow, but if you're doing power rankings and you go Pittsburgh, Kansas City, in whatever order, 1-2, do you have the Saints 3, or would you have another team?
Yeah, I think it, I mean, are we talking about like Breeze's back Saints? Like,
I'm just talking about right now. It's without Breeze, but you know, they've also won two games. Now, granted, I know Denver, that was obviously a unique situation with them. But they still have won the last two games without Breeze. So they're at their spot.
I think if I were to do, I would not have them in there. And I think that after that, there's, you know, these teams, whether it's Seattle, Tennessee, or Green Bay, that, you know, I would look at them and say, look, if the top two are, you know, Pittsburgh and Kansas City, as you said, and obviously their records, you know, they kind of earned the right to be there. But, you know, tell me teams that you think could beat them. You know, those three I just said, I think can. And, you know, I don't think it, you know, would be one of these things where it kind of take a miracle for it to happen. I think they kind of play football the way they want to play it and have the ability to do that. Yeah, I would put them in that mix for sure.
So how much of something we talked about earlier was that the secondary has gotten more aggressive for the Titans? Malcolm Butler was commenting on that. Desmond King has brought some of that tenacity since he got here. I mean, because he's that type of player. The Titans still have their warts on defense. I mean, we've seen it the last 2 weeks, even though they've made plays and they've gotten wins. But do you think that that just a little more aggressiveness has kind of helped that along, and that's what's going to help them maybe cover up some of the things that have troubled them this year.
There's no doubt they've gotten better on that side of the ball. And, you know, if you think about it, you know, you typically don't talk about the impact of trades during the middle of a season, but, you know, the trade for Desmond King and moving on from, I forget his name, Jonathan Joseph, yep. Like, it made a huge difference. I mean, it's made a huge, huge difference. I think John Robinson deserves a ton of credit for that move because, you know, it's one of those things, like, that wasn't a big story on Sunday Countdown that, oh, hey, here comes Desmond King. But the improvement there has been significant, and it hasn't exactly been an easy transition from the standpoint of, you know, with like COVID restrictions and stuff. It's like the trade happens, but it's like on like a 5-day processing, you know, situation before it can happen. So look, I think that, I think it's really improved the secondary play. I think that's helped quite a bit. You know, Harold Landry had a few plays this past weekend where, you know, they weren't sacks, but they were pressure on the quarterback, and I think that it, you know, impacted the throw. You know, so those things go hand in hand, and I think that they've been better on that side of the ball. And but if I were to pinpoint one thing and say, hey, this has been the difference, I think it's been the personnel change.
Are the Titans 9-3 when we talk to you next week?
I think so.
That was okay. That was a pretty dramatic pause. That was
you
kind
had to
of
think.
A,
was
that
it?
That was a Jim Rome pause. Yeah.
Well, look, I was for sure a few weeks ago, maybe said this to you guys, that the Dolphins were going to beat the Broncos a few weeks ago, and like then that game happened. I was like, what? You know, there's a few times where you're like, yeah, I'm sure it's going to happen, but. I will say this. One thing I know for sure. You know, obviously, I'm when I go on SportsCenter, a lot of times it's kind of the national perspective. And one thing I will say is like we're talking Titans every week. We are. And you know, I did a breakdown last week on their run game. I can't be more emphatic about this. I see teams all the time have injuries on the offensive line. And you hear every story coming out of that team about how, well, it's not fair. We got backups playing on the offensive line. We got injuries. You know, so that's why we're not running the ball well. It's why we're not protecting the quarterback well. I think people need to understand the Titans are on their third string left tackle. Guy that hasn't even really been with the team the entire time. And they're playing other guys at tight end, and they're running the football, and they've moved guys around, and they've had injuries on the offensive line. But Derrick Henry has had a great year, and he's a great back. The job they've done up front with guys that they were not planning on playing has been as good as what anybody across the league has done so far this year, with the guys up front.
And, oh, by the way, in the first round this year in the draft, they drafted an offensive lineman. He hasn't even seen the field, so. That's even more impressive.
I know.
Not true. He was on the field for victory.
Well, he has been on the field.
he did make his first appearance on the field. I don't know how many people saw it in their win over Indianapolis on Sunday. So I guess technically that is true. By the way, you're not doing Maryland-Michigan, right? Please tell me you're not.
I'm not. Did that get canceled? Did I get postponed?
It just got canceled, yeah. So I just wanted to make sure you weren't doing that game.
No, I do have a game that got like assigned this last weekend. They weren't supposed to play each other. I have Miami at Duke. So Miami's top 10 program. I think it's surprising to people. Miami is number 9.
Yeah.
And the Derrick King transfer has made a really, really big impact. And quite honestly, their offensive coordinator, Rhett Lashley, who's a Gus Malzahn disciple. His name, I think, has surfaced a little bit in the Vandy situation a few times from people I've talked to.
It has. Is your buddy Trent Dilfer going to put his name in his hat in the ring or no?
I don't think. Listen, I think people know where to find Trent. I don't think he needs to put his name in anywhere. And I do think that he's. Listen, he is. just over 24 hours away.
I know.
It's
less
a
than
big
24
game.
Hours away. He's less than 24 hours away of a big matchup in Cookeville.
Yes, absolutely. They're still playing. This just in.
Against CPA. Playing. It's a big
rematch. They actually broke through and beat them earlier in the season, and so now this is the rematch. It's going to be a good game.
Yeah, but, hey, in all seriousness, and I know that we've had some fun and you know, usually take shots at each other when we're on here with you guys, but yeah, he's done an awesome job. And one thing I can say for sure is, like, regardless of the record, which is obviously those guys have seen a lot of improvement in the record over there, but I think the experience that those kids have had playing for him has been far more significant than the record, and that's pretty awesome.
I could not agree more. It's just like what we're going to do tonight on these airwaves. We're airing a high school hockey game, and those kids at NBA playing for J.P. Dumont, I think the same thing. And we just had him on earlier in the show. The fact that they get to experience, you know, a former NHLer at a high level, you know, a very productive NHLer in his day, being their coach, that experience alone is something they'll take with them the rest of their life. And it's no different than what you just said about those kids over at Lipscomb Academy playing for Trent.
Mm-hmm. And I would say this, like, yes, Trent's a Super Bowl winning quarterback, and, you know, there's plenty of guys coaching high school and youth sports that have had pro success and stuff like that. But I think probably a bigger deal than that is honestly, like, how they care about the guys and how they want it to be a great experience. And especially with kind of this year, look, there's some states not playing, you know, high school sports and things like that. And so I think it's awesome for these kids at CPA, at Lipscomb, all these schools that are still playing, you know, NBA's hockey program, all that stuff. So, yeah, we should be thankful that that we live in an area where that stuff is going on right now. I know I am.
No doubt about it. Tim, always appreciate the visits. Have a great rest of your week. We'll do it again next Wednesday.
Cool. See you guys.
Good stuff, as always, from Tim Hasselbeck. And every week, he is brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine out in Bellevue, where Chase is located. Right now, I want to talk to you about some college hoops. Big tilt coming up between Gonzaga and Baylor. They're going to be going toe-to-toe, maybe for the top ranking in college basketball. And DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app, is going to give all you college basketball fans who sign up right now a chance to win $100 when betting on either the Zags or the Bears. Yeah, Gonzaga and Baylor, the clash of the Titans in college basketball. Plus, you'll get a deposit bonus up to $1,000 when signing up using the promo code 1025GAME. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app right now. Use the promo code 1025GAME when you sign up, and you'll have your shot to turn $1. Yep, you just have to bet $1 to win $100 on bet taking either Gonzaga or Baylor to win that game. Once again, you must use the code 1025GAME during sign-up for a limited time. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Remember, you must be 21 years of age or older. Tennessee only. Bonus comprised of a first deposit bonus. Deposit bonus requires 25 times playthrough. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and needs help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789. Thank you, Rick. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Wednesday afternoon. Brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joint Whiskey. Smoother than smooth. We do appreciate them sponsoring our show. Don't forget, college football game of the week this Saturday night. Yes, under the lights. Right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That's going to be presented by Gary Force Acura. And our game will be Alabama and LSU. Kickoff is set for 7 o'clock, like I said, right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Good stuff from Tim Hasselbeck. We'll head up to Cleveland and talk a little bit more about the opponent the Titans will face, the Browns, coming up in the final hour of the program. That's coming up at 1 o'clock. But they're at the end, and we've talked about it all week. What's going on over on West End? Derek Mason has been relieved of his duties. We talked to the interim coach, Todd Fitch, yesterday on the program, because that's typically when we have our weekly chat with Derek Mason. But now the real work is in front of the folks at Vanderbilt, whether it's Candace Story Lee, the athletics director, a new chancellor, or the powers that be. the people that are going to be making or be a part of this decision. And it's a big decision because if you talk to enough people, everybody is, I kind of feel like, all over the place on what Vanderbilt should be looking for. And so let's just start there. Let's start, and Willie, I'm going to start with you because you're a former Vanderbilt guy. Of course, you played two sports. Football was not one of them, but you've been around the program your entire adult life. What should they be looking for? Should it be somebody with more star power, recognition that will get them a lot of attention, maybe can shake some trees behind the scenes and get things done like James Franklin was able to do because they have more pull because of their name recognition? Maybe they've made a lot of money, and so they can do things better behind the scenes, and it'll get the program a lot of attention. Or do you think they need some young, energetic guy who will just, you know, pump some new blood into that program, get things going in the right direction, reach out to everybody, do all the things, roll up your sleeves like James Franklin was willing to do, you know, with the media, with the fan base, with the boosters, the donors? Or is it more of an experienced guy? Where do you think they need to start? Where would you start with this search? What type of person would you be looking for?
I don't think I would close myself off to thinking that there's one formula. Let's take James Franklin, who was.
But honestly, Willie, there's got to be one formula because you've got to hire. You're only hiring one coach. So, what is the right formula in your mind? That's what I'm asking.
Well, I'm giving you my answer. You mentioned James Franklin. James Franklin was complete unknown when he was hired, right?
Well, other than he was the coach in waiting. Remember the,
coach in waiting
at Maryland?
Which is a term that we don't really hear.
No, we never hear it anymore.
Yeah, that was when it was a hot term.
It usually doesn't pan out well one way or the other.
Wasn't Jimbo kind of the first?
Oh, there was all kinds of coaches in waiting. It was
It started with Jimbo Fisher at Florida State. That's kind of how it that's one of the first names I remember.
Yeah, Will Muschamp under Mack Brown was one. It doesn't usually go well. But I don't think that there's one set formula that works. I would tend to lean towards the up-and-comer. I think you want to catch a guy on the rise. I don't think it's a job for just anybody. So I think the energy, the enthusiasm is something that is very, very important. I think innovation is very important. You've also got to understand that it is not going to be the same recruiting at Vanderbilt as it is in a lot of other places, which is why I think younger tends to be a better choice, if you ask me. Somebody, let's say that you had experience somewhere else and you'd won. I don't know, Les Miles, somebody like that. And you want other places. I don't know that that's the way I would go.
Can I counter with something?
I like Will Healy, I think, fits the profile of the type of guy that I think is probably best served. But when I say that, I don't want to cross off guys like Jeff Fisher off the list who have a lot to bring to the table.
If
somebody
in a
truly
category.
Has a super interest in wanting to take on the job, I think you got to listen to those guys. I think there's probably a long list of coaches that wouldn't touch that job, right? They have no interest in it, wouldn't want to win there. They've got other ideas on how they want to succeed as a coach. So I think you look at the coaches who enthusiastically want the challenge, and you start there.
My counter with that is, I understand what you're saying, and that's more than fair. But my counter to that argument is, when I view North Carolina, I view North Carolina as a basketball school. Everybody knows that. Nobody's thinking about North Carolina football. It's got its own unique challenges in the ACC. And you would think, because it's a basketball school and football has always been tough to win at any real level, you would think young, energetic, different. You got to go that route, right? Well, they hired Mac Brown. And Mac Brown has done nothing but come in there and get them ton of attention, get them tons of recruits, and put them as a ranked football program. Same thing at Arizona State. Not an easy place to do it. And they hired Herm Edwards. So those guys have gotten it done. And you could say, well, those jobs are tough. You maybe get the young, energetic, you know, get things going. You need to think outside. Okay, well, they brought in guys that made no would fit none of these categories. On the streets, not head coaches. Herm Edwards hadn't been a head coach in a decade plus. Those two hires have worked out pretty well.
Yeah, that's why I said I don't have one formula. That's why I think the Jeff Fisher idea is intriguing, especially when you consider how a guy like Herm Edwards is done. A unique person who has a unique background is not something that you should turn the other way. That's why I don't think you can have a preconceived notion on, you know, what you're looking for.
I know, but I'm asking you. That's what we do. And we also, give opinions.
When you mentioned Mac Brown years ago was at North Carolina. So he knew how to win at North Carolina because he had been there before. So he went away for a long time and came back.
A little
back.
Bit different circumstances than Herm. I get it, albeit, yes. Before he took the Texas job, he was the coach at North Carolina. So I get that. But I'm asking you. I know all the different types of coaches. We've already gone through that. I'm asking you what you would do. What do you think they need?
I just gave you my answer.
Great. You laid out every possible candidate that there is. Did we solve anything with that?
No. What did I end up my answer? You obviously weren't listening. I said
Will Healy
fits the profile of what I think is the best formula.
Right, but you followed up with a but. But then I wouldn't rule out this.
Right. I'm allowed to give my opinion. That's my opinion. I would also listen to the unique circumstances around Jeff Fisher. But to me, it's a young, up-and-coming coach with energy, enthusiasm, a guy that really wants the challenge of winning at Vanderbilt. That's the most important thing.
Okay.
That's why I would lean that way more so than Jeff Fisher. But I would want to hear what Jeff Fisher has to say because that's a unique background.
So I'm sitting here chomping at the bit because I don't disagree with everything you just said, but I think I look at Jeff Fisher and I think the examples of Herm Edwards and Mac Brown are really good. I almost put them in the same category as somebody like Will Healy, and here's why. No, they're not the up-and-comer, you know, young coach, but they still have that desire and that energy because they've been out of the game and they want to get back in the game. Now, Herm, as you mentioned, Darren, a little bit different. But Mac Brown, I think Mac Brown was pretty open that, yeah, he's enjoying TV, but he wants to get back into coaching. Jeff Fisher has been on this show many times and has said he hasn't closed the door, that he wants to get back in, that – you know, he's enjoying fishing and being a granddad and all that stuff, but he misses coaching. So if you hire somebody like him, I do think you're going to get the same amount of energy as you would out of a Will Healy. And I think that those two guys are really good candidates because they're going to be willing to do the extra work that job requires. You know, Clark Lee, I think, is a good coach. And probably, you know, could be a good coach here in Nashville at Vanderbilt. But he's coming from a program that's done a lot of winning, has some of the best facilities. He's been used to what it looks like in a big program like that. He hasn't been used to what you're going to get at Vanderbilt things
he's played at Vanderbilt. He knows what Vanderbilt
well,
is.
I understand that.
He was a two-sport athlete at Vanderbilt.
So. I understand that.
He did not play
still,
baseball at Vanderbilt. He played baseball at Belmont. And then played football at Vanderbilt, which is – I'd love to hear more about that
He played
story.
Baseball at Belmont
yes.
and then football
– At Vanderbilt.
At Vanderbilt.
But my
yeah,
point
it's
is
it's
where he's been –
a story, which is why I would want to learn more about that. I honestly don't know much.
How does that happen?
Well, you transfer. Both schools are in Nashville.
I thought he played for Corbs.
No.
Huh, okay. Because I know Tim Corbin hasn't he said something about Clark Lee?
Chris Lee, when we had him on, mentioned that Tim Corbin...
Hasn't he talked to somebody, right, whether it was Chris Lee or somebody about Clark Lee, right? I thought I saw that.
Well, Chris said that Tim Corbin has a lot of respect for Clark for Clark Lee. I want to know more about him. I admit, even though he's from Nashville and his family has a lot of Vanderbilt ties, and he played for Vanderbilt, I don't know much about him. I don't know him. I'd like to know more. I feel like I know more about Will Healy. But I would put Clark Lee and Will Healy on a similar type of profile. Young up-and-comers. And for that matter, Jamie Chadwell, who doesn't have the direct ties to Vanderbilt that the other two have, but he fits the profile of young up-and-comer.
Yeah, but where I was going with that is, you know, Will Healy has had to rebuild a program at Austin Peay, granted, much smaller scale, and then he goes to Charlotte, and it's kind of the same thing. So I look at him.
That's intriguing. That's sort of the mission impossible, right? You
right.
can't win at these places.
And
I'm going to find a way to be successful there.
I understand Clark Lee's connection. I totally get that. And that's important, too. But what I'm saying is where he's been the last few years, I mean, it's different. You don't have to do the type of work at Notre Dame that you're going to have to do at Vanderbilt. And I'm not saying that he can't, but some of these other names that we've thrown out, I feel like that's what they've been doing. And so
can I make a point about that? I think the thing about Notre Dame that's intriguing to me that I think could help if you were to come to Vanderbilt is, no, Notre Dame has all of the resources. You're absolutely right. Right? But the trick about Notre Dame is you're trying to keep a certain level of academic standard, but you're supposed to win a national championship. So I think that's a unique challenge, right? You're held to a very, very high standard. At Notre Dame, if you win 7 or 8 games and all your players get good grades and stuff like that, and
it's
you run
acceptable.
The program of class, that's not good enough for Notre Dame.
They want
all that stuff,
been,
and they want to win
right.
a national championship.
But that has been the knock, right? They've said, well, then you got to change your standards at Notre Dame. Like you've got to be able to take certain type of kids then, yeah, right? Because that's been out there before.
Oh, yeah. So
you want to win
Notre
at a high
Dame,
level, but you don't want
players,
to let everybody
yes.
in there.
So I think the challenge of recruiting Notre Dame is a big challenge. So that I think that could help
and that's a good
in
point.
The translation to Vanderbilt.
I wouldn't have a clue about these other guys. I just don't. I don't know them. Will Healy's the only guy that we've had any interaction. All these other guys we've just been watching from afar. I wouldn't know if they're equipped or not.
Well, you know Jeff Fisher. Do you feel like Jeff?
No, I'm not talking about Jeff Fisher.
Guy?
I'm talking about Clark Lee and the guy from Coastal Carolina.
Right,
Chadwell.
Right. I know nothing about Jamie
Chadwell.
I didn't
guys.
Know his name until about 3 weeks ago.
Right,
I never heard of
started
those guys.
Winning, and
yeah,
then
yeah
people started talking about.
They're undefeated, and so yeah, they're having a special season. But I wouldn't. Will Healy's the only guy we've had any direct contact of those three of kind of the young up and comer guys that are out there.
But I think what we all agree on, and we're all saying maybe in different ways, is you got to have somebody that is going to do like James Franklin and do the work and behind the scenes and go and have the conversations with the people above him and say, hey, no, this has to change. And it could be, you know, unfortunately, one of those where you say it and you have this impassioned speech and it just nothing happens. But that's the type of person that they need. And I think Derek did some of that, but, you know, they're two different personalities. I mean,
well,
James Franklin's very in your face.
Don't you find it interesting, Chase, that David Williams hired both James Franklin and Derek Mason, right? And they both turned out to be very different in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I would think that you are trying to find a similar type, but I think the credentials of Derek Mason, which, to be honest, were a lot higher, I think, he probably had better credentials than James Franklin. Even though there were some similarities, but he was a coordinator on a red-hot program. Maryland hadn't done a whole lot, which is why I don't think I'd ever heard of James Franklin. But Derek Mason was the defensive coordinator under Jim Harbaugh and David Shaw for an extremely successful Stanford program, which is the same profile of kind of school that Vanderbilt is. So it seemed like a no-brainer, right? But I think when you look a little closer, so it's interesting how David Williams saw exactly what they needed with James Franklin, but not as much with Derek Mason. And this
it was
is not a big knock on Derek
really
Mason,
difficult
because he did a lot of good things.
Franklin.
But
you
wasn't
just
the
don't,
same.
The James Franklin types just don't grow on trees. I mean, it's that was going to be almost an impossible task to duplicate James Franklin as in the way he's wired type of guy. Those guys do not grow on trees. They don't. Now, they need to try to find a guy close to him. But, like I said, those guys are not – they're not everywhere. But James Franklin, as if you've listened to this show and our dealings with him, that cat's just wired differently than most. And so that is going to be hard to find. I bring it up because I think it's – I don't think it's crazy. If you are – look – stating the obvious is what the three of us know and any Vanderbilt fan knows. The biggest challenge is not who they hire. The biggest challenge is what's next with a brand new chancellor and a brand new AD, and is there going to be a fresh perspective and a new attitude over there that they're willing to do the things that it takes to win? Are they going to give the next person a chance? That is right. Stating the obvious that we all know. And until they do that, it doesn't matter who they hire. It's not going to change the results.
No, I disagree with that. I think it matters a lot who they hire, because I think you can still succeed to a point.
Well, that's what I'm getting at. If you hired a Jeff Fisher, you are hiring him. You would be hiring him knowing that you're going to have to agree to do things that you haven't agreed to do in the past. You will, because Jeff Fisher is not going to allow you just to operate the way you've been operating.
He's right, because if they do, he's going to go fishing.
It's like Trent Dilfer. I mean, which is what he did, right, at Lipscomb, you're not going to run Lipscomb the way you've been running it in the past. It's going to be run differently, as right. We know. We've been over there doing shows.
There was a big investment.
And it looks completely different.
There was a gigantic investment in Trent Dilfer and the entire program. I get what you're saying. And I think from what I heard from Candace Story Lee in the press conference the other day, I think that's going to be their pitch, that there will be a renewed commitment. Time will tell, because, you know, as Chris Lee said the other day, we've heard it all before.
Yeah, those are words. We'll have to see actions.
But why I do think it does matter who the coach is, because I think James Franklin is one, and the results speak for themselves. The other guy that had that, and I'm going a little further back here, but Jerry DiNardo had that same thing. They did, I think, make some changes, some radical changes in investment.
It's a good call.
In the program when Jerry DiNardo was there. And Mitch brought this up. Had there been a 12-game schedule back then, which there wasn't, he probably would have gotten at least one, maybe two, 6-6s in there. They ended up 5-6 twice, 4-7 the other 2 years. But he made huge progress in that program. And I do think he was a guy like James Franklin that was pushing the envelope, that was driving things. We've got to do better. And he had tremendous enthusiasm. And he kind of, like James Franklin, he moved up, right, in terms of Power Five. He didn't get fired. He didn't fail. He moved up. Whereas some of the other guys in between, they had a different, they didn't get things done. They didn't drive getting advantages and progress in the facilities and the things that it seems like you had to do. And like you said, Darren, it shouldn't be that hard. It should go without saying that the school is going to give you the resources and put behind you what you need to succeed. But that hasn't always been the case. We know that. You almost have to make it happen on your own, which shouldn't have to be.
It's hardly ever the case. That's why I'm saying everybody now who's been here more than 5 minutes knows anything they say now is just words. It's going to take actions for anybody to believe it, period. It's going to take actions. And the minute, we see, moving equipment and, dirt, piles of dirt and seeing things changed, workers doing the thing, nobody's going to believe anything. It's just words. Because they've got a whole lot of things they need to change over there, and they need to put their money where their mouth is. And if they're willing to do that, then maybe things will change. But right now, just saying that they are hopeful, that's just words. Like, nobody's going to believe that right now. So I'll be curious to see what direction they go. And is that? And by the way, I would love to sit in that room and see what questions they're being asked, right? Because a good candidate is going to ask them questions and see, and I would love to know their answers, what they tell the candidates, the good ones, the ones that say, And so what are you going to do for me? You know, what are you going to do for this program? What are your plans? Are you going to change this? What, you know, what money are you putting in? What are you going to build? What are you going to do for us? I'd love to know their answers. Right now, I'd love to know that you have a word about BetMGM.
I do. And I've been telling you about them for a while. And I told you about the big parlay that I hit, $1,000. That was awesome. Well, here's why they are the king of sportsbooks. Because they've added a little twist to their parlays. One game parlay, an exciting new feature designed to help you make selections with a single game from over 400 bet types, including team and player props. You combine them all together. It is that simple. Log into your BetMGM account and raise the stakes for a chance to win big. Making your same game win, total, and prop picks is easy with one game parlay. New to BetMGM? Sign up today. Sign up today and make every play matter more than ever. You can make one-game parlay bets on pro football and soccer with more sports coming soon. Go ahead and take your favorite player to score, the home team to cover, the over in yards for the star running back. You can do it all. Just log in today or download the BetMGM app and try one-game parlay. Turn game day into payday. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. You must be 21 years or older. Must be present in Tennessee. For gambling problem support, call the Tennessee Red Line at 800-889-9789.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.